Yud Ches Iyar, Lag BaOmer, Sunday the 18th of May, Dain Yonas and David Hall. Compromise under duress. This week's tow away has been sponsored by Family Weingarten, Ilu Nishmas, Reb Shloime David, Ben Reb Moshe, Zeche Livrocha.
Good morning. I want to discuss a case that we had based in Eretz Yisrael. We won't go through all the aspects of the case, but it was a very interesting case, and there was a lot of halacha to talk about in this case. We want to discuss one particular aspect of the case, and I've been asked to mention a couple of words about Lag BaOmer at the end as well, in Mitzvah Hashem. So the case involves a person who had lent money to an institution in order for them to purchase a building. He lent a very significant sum of money. He lent $1.5 million to the institution, with conditions to pay it back over a period of time. The first $500,000 was paid back more or less on time. They owed still $1 million. And they delayed in, the institution delayed in paying back the money, and eventually they came to him and they said to him, "We'll give you $900,000 and we'll call it quits if you let us off the other $100,000. The person agreed to this, the Malve, the lender, and then he received the money, and then subsequently he came to Basin and claimed the rest of the loan that he said he was owed. To which the institution responded that you were moichel that was the agreement we made, that we would give you 900,000 and you would be moichel the last 100,000. So we made a compromise, and the compromise is binding on both parties, and therefore you cannot claim any more the last $100,000. So that was the shaila. There was a few other aspects of the shaila as well, but that's the point that we will discuss here, Mitzvah Shem, today. So what is the halacha in such a situation? The person who lent the money claims that he was forced into this compromise, and therefore if he's forced into it, the agreement to the compromise is not binding and is not valid. That's his claim. So let's examine if this is correct. So in halacha, we have to understand that in order to create any transaction, any financial commitment, such as an employment contract or a sale, transfer of title, anything like that, any financial commitment between two sides, we need two things in halacha. First of all, we need a maaseh kinyan. We need an act of acquisition. If a person sells a house, they have to transfer the property in either the accepted manner or with a shtar, with kesev, with chazaka, according to the Mishnah. If a person wants to start an employment contract, a kinyan has to be signed. Starting the actual work itself is a type of kinyan. We need something other than just an agreement between the two parties. There has to be something concrete, a form of kinyan. And depending on what type of transaction we're discussing, the type of kinyan that is required will vary. But it's not enough just to have a kinyan. You have to have the agreement of both parties. A financial agreement or commitment only works in halacha if both parties agree to it. If either party doesn't agree to it, it doesn't work. Now, normally, if a person doesn't agree to it, he doesn't do it. But sometimes, a person can be forced into it. So, at the time, he presents his agreement, but in reality, he doesn't really want to. He's forced into it. So, what's the halacha if a person does a kinyan, but he claims that he was forced into it? So, the Gemara says in Baba Basra, Daf is Mem Zayin Amud Beis, Mem Ches Amud Aleph, the sugya of Toluhu V'Zovin. The Gemara there says Toluhu V'Zovin Halacha L'Maisa is Zvinei Zvinei. If a person is forced into making a sale, then the sale is valid, even though he did not agree to it of his own free will. He was forced into it, and the duress can be either physical threat or even financial threat. A person says that I will take away some of your assets if you don't agree to make this sale. Nonetheless, if he agrees to it, even under such circumstances, the sale is a valid sale. The Gemara says, Agav Zuzi Gomor Maxi. Since he receives the full value of the item that he's selling, or the property that he's selling, even though he's forced into it, ultimately he agrees to it. Now, the first point we have to mention about this is this is clearly only if he's been given the full value of the item or the property that he's selling. If he's forced into selling it for a lesser value, then in fact he's not making just a sale, he's actually giving away a gift. Halacha is, Tolyu v'yohiv, if someone is forced into giving away something, that is not a valid gift. So if a person is forced into giving away a gift and can prove afterwards that he was forced into it, the gifting is invalid and he gets it back. Because he didn't get anything in exchange, there's no svara of agav Zuzi Gomamak, and he didn't get the full compensation. He was forced to give it something away, so clearly it doesn't work. However, if he's given the full value of the item that he's giving away, even though he's forced into it, ultimately it works. It's important to note, obviously, that this is not to say that the person who forces him is doing the correct thing. He is definitely over Issa Deraisa of Lo Sachmod, is one of the Ten Commandments, to force someone to sell something against his will, even if you give them the full value of the object that he's giving you, is an Issa of Chomos, it's an Issa of Lo Sachmod, but in Beis Din there is no recourse to cancel it. there is one way to avoid this situation, making such a kinyan if you're forced into it, if you find yourself in such a situation, and that is the musig, the concept of mesiras moido'o. I don't want to go into it in detail, it's a whole subject to do itself, but if a person feels that he's being forced into a transaction, he can make a declaration in front of at least two witnesses, doesn't have to be in front of the other party, obviously usually isn't, in which he says in advance that you should know that I'm about to make a sale, but it's been done against my will. I have no choice. I've been threatened, and therefore I'm agreeing to it under duress. But I hereby declare that I don't intend, with a full intention, to make this transaction, and therefore I will claim at a later date in the Beis Din to void the transaction. This is called Mesiras Moidor. As I say, it's a whole sukkah unto itself, and that is the way, if one finds oneself in such a situation, that one can avoid it. But otherwise, if one is not Moshe Moedor, if one's forced into a mechir, into a sale, as long as you get full value for the object you're giving away, you cannot void it afterwards. Now, what about when a person makes a mechila? He's owed some money, but he foregoes the chayv. What happens if he's forced into a mechila? So here, clearly, since he's not getting anything in exchange for it, a mechila is like a present, it's like a gift in this respect. He's not getting anything in exchange, he's owed some money, and he's giving it up. So it's as if he's giving away a gift for no reason whatsoever. So if he's forced into a mechila, the mechila is not valid, and he can ask for the full value of the loan that he's owned afterwards. Now we come to the very interesting halacha of pshara. A person is forced into a compromise. So the Shulchan Aruch says in Simon Reishay, which is the Simon of Moidor, and a person being forced into transactions, that a pshara, a compromise, is like a mecher, it's like a sale, rather than like a gift. So the Smara, which is the classic commentary on the Shulchan Aruch of Cheshem Mishpat, explains why it is that a pshara is like a mecher rather than like a matona. And the reason is, he says, that when you have two people who have a claim or a counterclaim against each other, while Reuven says that Shimon owes me money, Shimon feels that he doesn't owe any money. So each one has a claim. One of them is right. Almost always, it can't be that both of them are right. One of them is right. But each one feels that he is correct. And therefore, what they could do is they could go to Beis Din and get a psak halacha and find out what the din is. But instead of doing that, each one agrees to meet each other, for example, halfway. It's not always halfway, but let's say they agree to meet each other halfway. He agrees to pay 50% of their claim. So that's like a mecher, it's like a sale rather than a gift. It's not a regular mechila when the person who's claiming agrees to forego half of the loan. Because in exchange for that, he's getting the half that the other person doesn't want to give him either. He wants $100. He wants to give him nothing. He agrees to give him $50. So in effect, he's selling his claim for half of what he's asking for. And who are then the other way around? The person on the conversely on the other side says, I don't really want to give everything, but I'm willing to give half in order to avoid the possibility that I might have to pay everything. So in that respect, pshara is like a mecher rather than like a mechila or a matona. In which case, says the Shulchan Aruch, if a person is forced into a pshara, then he cannot retract afterwards. Because a pshara is like a mecher, and halacha is when a person is forced into a mecher, if he's not Moshe Moedor beforehand, he cannot retract afterwards, and the pshara is binding. However, although that's the Stam Loshon of the Shulchan Aruch, the Acharonim discuss various different scenarios of a person who's forced into a pshara, and as we'll see, not every case is the same. Again, to clarify what the Sma says, the reason why the Shulchan Aruch says a pshara is like a mecher is because you're trading your claim for the value possibly of what it really is. For example, to take a very simple, to make it a little bit more concrete, if a person had a claim against somebody else, a financial claim, he's going to go to Bezdin. Instead of him personally going to Bezdin, he's willing to offer to sell his claim to somebody else. So someone else will take his place, and if he wins, would get the money, and if he loses, would lose everything. So is there a value to that claim? There may well be a value to that claim. It's a possibility, it's a chance that you're going to win the entire amount. There's a chance you're not going to win the entire amount, you might not get anything. So if you were to sell that claim to somebody else, there would be some type of financial value put on that. That's why a pshara is like a mecha. What happens, however, if the defendant knows full well that he actually does owe the full amount of money? But he says to the claimant, I know that I've borrowed $10,000 from you, whatever it should be, but I'm going to deny it if you take me to Bezdin. And you've got no proof, because we didn't write a contract, there were no witnesses, so I'm going to deny it. I can easily get out of it, and you'll lose. But I'm willing to make a compromise, and I'll give you half of the money if you let me off the rest of the money. So in this case, he's also compromising, because he's giving up half of his claim to get the other half of his claim. He's being forced into it, but this is not like a mecha. This is a mechila. Why? Because his claim is not worth half the value. His claim is genuinely worth the entire value of the claim. And both parties know it. One party is forcing him to be mochel. He's not forcing him to compromise. He's forcing him to give up half of the value of his claim with the threat that if you don't, you will lose the entire value of your claim. That is not a tolu to make a pshara, that's not forcing him into a pshara, that's forcing him into a mechila. And in such a case, the so-called pshara will be invalid, and if he can somehow prove that he really is owed the money, even if he agreed to such an arrangement before that he comes to Bezdin, he can still claim for the rest of the money when he comes to Bezdin. And this is, there's a Tshuva Sarashba about this, there was a case exactly like that, when a person threatened somebody and forced him into being moichel half of his debt, and the Rashba says that that's not called a pshara in the sense that what the Shulchan Aruch calls a pshara being like a mecha, that's surely like a forced into a mechira or matana, which is not valid. Nevertheless, there may be circumstances where even though the claimant, Reuven, is actually correct in his tainus, nonetheless, if he accepts a compromise, it will be binding. Let's consider the following scenario. Shimon owes Reuven money, $100,000, but he doesn't have any money to pay it back. He doesn't have any cash, and he doesn't have any assets. That's the situation that Reuven finds himself in. Both parties agree the money is owed. But the defendant says, I simply don't have the money to pay you. Says the defendant, Al pi halacha, a person who owes money from a loan is not obliged to go out and raise the funds in order to pay it back. If he has money, he has to pay it back. But if he doesn't have any money, we cannot be mechayev him to go and raise money in order to pay the money back. Says Shimon to Reuven, I owe you the money. I don't have any money. So you can take me to Bezdin, I'll admit it, but I simply don't have the money to pay you. However, I'm willing to go out of my way and make sure that I can raise the funds in order to pay you back the money. But I'm only willing to do that if you compromise and let me off a certain amount of the money. If you don't, then I don't have any money, I won't pay you anything. Again, it's a type of threat, because Reuven, the claimant, is being forced into compromising. But on the other hand, the situation is such that it's not the other party who's forcing him into the compromise. It's a situation which Reuven finds himself in. This is important to note. When we talk about a person being forced into a mechila or being forced into a matana that is not valid, that's only if the coercion is coming from the other party. If the coercion is coming from the person himself, unser denafshei, that doesn't count as an onus. So if a person would come to Bezdin and say, I gave away a matana, or I sold a property, I was forced into it, was moisim adar beforehand. And we say, why were you forced into it? He said, because I needed to raise the money. And that's not called an onus. That's nothing to do with the other party. It's only ever considered an onus if the other party forces it into it. Now in our situation, Shimon says, I'm not forcing you to compromise. That's the situation that you're in, because I don't have any money and I can't pay you. So I'm willing to go out of my way to raise the money on condition that you let me off part of the money. In that case, even though Reuven might find himself being coerced into making a pshara, that pshara will be valid and he cannot claim it afterwards. He's given up part of his claim, but not because the other party is forcing him into it, because the situation is such that it's worth his while and he has no choice but to do such a thing. And in that case, the pshara will be valid.
If Shimon later wins the pool, wins the money, let's say.
He will not have to pay. Because
he's still chayv or not?
No, he won't be, because he's agreed to be, Reuven has agreed to be moichel part of the chayv in exchange for the fact that he will get part of the money now. If not for the fact that he would agree to that, Shimon would not have gone out of his way to raise the money, and therefore, in that case, he would have owed all of the money. But since they came to this agreement, he agreed to be moichel in order to get a certain amount of cash up front, and therefore the mechila will be valid. And if Shimon later manages to raise a money or become wealthy, he wouldn't have to pay back the money that he hasn't paid. Sorry? So again, Mosius Mador is a different situation altogether. The rules of the game change, and there's a lot of halachas about that. I don't want to go into that right now. So now let's return to our case study in the Beis Din. The ruling of the Beis Din will depend on the precise circumstances of the case, and there's a number of possible scenarios which might follow on from our basic case. Again, a person that Reuven had lent money to an institution. He lent them $1 million. They said to him, "We will give you $900,000 on condition that you're moichel the last $100,000." So he accepted that money. He took it, and he later came to a person and claimed the last $100,000. So now, can he claim that money, or has he foregone his rights to receive that money? Has he been moichel it? Is it called an onus to be moichel, or is it called an onus for a pshoro, in which case he wouldn't be able to claim back the extra money? Well, now, it very much depends on the circumstance. Let's go through a number of possibilities. The most simple possibility is, if there's no one forcing anybody, but the institution or the loiva or whoever it should be, would come to the malva and say to him, "Listen here, I've got the assets, I've got the money, but I need the money myself. Do me the favour, we appreciate the loan, let us off part of the loan, we'll pay you off part of the loan, let us off the rest of the loan." In such a case, if Reuven the Malva agrees to such an arrangement, then obviously he's been moichel l'chayv, he can't change his mind at a later date. No one forced him into it. Obviously he could have insisted on his rights, he's got a right to take to claim the entire claim. He decided not to, for whatever reason, out of his own goodness, he decided to be moichel l'chayv. So that type of pshara, where he takes part of the money from his own free will and is willing to forego the rest of the chayv, is a clear mechila. No one forced him into it. He can't ask for his money back afterwards. What happens, however, if the institution is not being honest with him? The institution says, "We don't have enough money to pay you. Please be moichel us," when really they do have enough money to pay him. In that case, the deal is invalid. He's not been moichel of his own free will. He's been moichel based on the false information which they gave him. And therefore, if he later discovers they do have money, then he can claim the rest of the money back. That's a mechila b'tos. What the same halacha would apply if, again, they had the assets. They deny that they had the assets. He's been tricked into it. Or even if they didn't deny that they had the entire assets, but the amount of money that they're offering as a part payment, if he thinks that that's all they have, then again he's been tricked into being moichel the other part of the chayv, and the mechila will be invalid. What happens if the institution did have sufficient assets in order to pay the entire loan, but they warned the malva that they would deny the loan and somehow get out of it, if there's no proof, if there's no shtar, if there's no witnesses, somehow get out of the loan, get out of the debt, unless he agrees to compromise. So again, this is clearly the case where we were discussing before. That's when they're forcing him unethically and illegally to be moichel part of the chayv. That's not a called a pshara which you're forced into, which is valid. That's an illegal pshara. You're being forced into it, and therefore he could claim the rest of the money back afterwards if he can prove that he was forced into it. And it doesn't have to be, even if they said they'll deny the entire loan, even if they say they'll deny part of the loan, again, they're forcing him financially to compromise. Even if they were to say, as indeed was in our case, not quite that we will deny the whole loan, but we will drag things out. They said to him, "You're right, we owe the money, we can't deny it, you've got a contract, but you'll have to take us to Beis Din, you might have to end up taking us to court, we will use the process as much as we can in order to drag things out." That is what is called, in a halacha, a ganav. That is someone who is deliberately forcing you, threatening you with losing from your own assets in order to receive the money which is rightfully yours, al pi halacha. And therefore, if the institution does that, then again, the person is being forced into a mechila, he's not being forced into a pshara, and therefore, the mechila will be invalid and he can claim back the rest of the money. However, what if the institution genuinely doesn't have the money? They don't have the money and they don't have the assets to pay. They said to him, we will initiate a fundraising drive specifically to pay off this loan. If we don't do anything, then you're right, we owe you the money, but we simply don't have the assets, and you'll have to wait until we get the money. But we're willing to go out of our way to try and raise the money in order to pay off the loan, but we would only do that if you're willing to forego part of the loan. Now, in this case, again, although Reuven might feel that he's being forced into a pshara, in this case, the pshara will be valid. And the reason is because that is the situation which he finds himself in. It's not the other party that's forcing him into it. It's the circumstances which force him into it. The other party is not denying the loan. They're not denying the amount of money they have. There's a free declaration of their assets, and they're being perfectly truthful. And there is no money to pay off the loan, or certainly not sufficient money. So again, that's up to the Reuven, the Malva. He can say to them, I don't accept it. I'm willing to sit and wait until you have money, and then I'll claim it. He can do whatever he wants. This is already a negotiation between two parties. But no one's forcing him into it. The situation, perhaps, is forcing him into it. He feels that he's being forced into it because that's the situation that he's in. But it's not the other party who's illegally forcing him into it. They're being honest with him and saying, that is the matter. Now, he doesn't have to agree with it. He can say, I don't agree, I'll wait until you have money. He can say, I don't agree, I'll take a power payment now, and then I'll wait for the rest of the money. But if he does agree that he'll take, in our example, $900,000 now and be mochel the rest of the chayv, because he knows that they're going out of their way to raise the money in order for this arrangement, then he's agreed of his own free will to a pshara, which the situation perhaps forced him into, but not the other party forced him into. And in addition, the important point being that in the situation that he's in, that is the genuine value of his claim at the moment. If a person's owed $1 million and someone denies it, really the value of his claim is $1 million. That's what he's owed. If the person has the assets and they're denying their assets, again, he's being forced into giving up something of which he belongs. But if he's owed $1 million, but the other party doesn't have the money, and they're willing to go out of their way to raise $900,000, if he's mochel the other $100,000, that is genuinely financially the value of his claim at the moment. He's not being tricked, he's not being illegally forced. In the situation which he finds himself at the moment, that is the value of his claim. So there's two points here. First of all, he's not being forced into it by the other party. And secondly, at the moment, for whatever reason, that is the value of the claim that he has. And therefore, if he agrees, he doesn't have to agree to such a situation, but if he does agree to it, he's agreed to a pshara without being forced into it, and he won't have any recourse to Bezin afterwards to claim the extra money.
What if the duress is entirely on his side, that he is desperate for the money?
Again, that's something we mentioned earlier. That's never called duress. If the person who agrees to it says, I was forced into it because I needed to raise funds for my own reason, that's not a claim of onus at all. He'll never be able to come to Bezin afterwards and say, I was forced into it. Because that's nothing to do with the other party.
The date that the debt was due has passed, then he needed the money.
That's true, but again, the other party is not currently forcing him into anything. The other party doesn't have the funds, and therefore that's the situation. It's not the other party who's forcing him now to accept an agreement. It's the situation he is in. He might need to raise the funds, and therefore he feels forced into it. But nonetheless, it's not the other party that is forcing him currently to accept this agreement, and therefore that wouldn't be a time of onus and abasin afterwards.
And this story that the merchant has the building.
Oh, so that was one of the considerations in our particular situation, that the Moisa did in fact have the building. The building was worth more than the value of the loan, and therefore in theory he could have claimed in Basin, and he could have forced them to sell off the building and repay the loan. In our particular situation, there were a number of additional factors. The person actually took advice from a Roth beforehand, was actually Moisa Modor. There was a question about whether we needed to be Moisa Modor, because in this case he was forced into a Mechili and forced into a Pshara. Aloch Lamaisa, without going into all the details of this case, we actually were Mechai of the institution, and they had to pay the extra $100,000. And the main reason being because they did genuinely have the assets, and therefore the only reason why he agreed to it is because they basically forced him into it. They threatened that they would drag things out, and therefore eventually I actually did get the money back. So that's the basic kivun. So now, just to summarise, if a person is forced into a mecher, as long as he gets the full value of his property, it's valid unless he's moser medom beforehand. If a person is forced into a matona or a mechila, then it's invalid. He can claim it back afterwards if he can prove this. If a person is forced into a bshara, it very much depends. If he's forced into a bshara because the other party is threatening either physically or threatening financially or threatening to deny the loan or threatening to drag things out and make him have to actually pay out money in order to recover the assets which he's genuinely owed, then that's being forced into a mechila or matona, not a mechira, and therefore it's invalid. But if the situation is such, it's not the other party who forced him, but he finds himself in a situation that it's worth his while to make a pshara, then very often, even though he might feel that he's forced into it, he won't be able to come to Beis Din afterwards and invalidate the pshara and claim the rest of the money. Briefly, to talk a couple of words about the subject of Lag BaOmer, as we heard earlier, the Shulchan Aruch says that Noisin Noshim Shulchan Mechaber says from the Lamed Daled, the Rambam says from Lamed Gimel on the Omer, the Rambam says knowing about Tzas Simcha, Mixas Simcha. The reason given, the classic reason, is because of the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva, who stopped dying, as was pointed out earlier. The Pri Chodesh asked a very stark kasha. Meisu Kul on the Gemara says there were none of them was left. The Gorn on the Shulchan Aruch stelt suit to the Gemara in Tainis about the Chamisha Asar Ba'av. Why Chamisha Asar Ba'av is Yom Tov? One, the six reasons in the Gemara in Baba Basra, one of the reasons is that the Meisei Midbos stopped dying on Chamisha Asar Ba'av. But thereafter, in that situation, the Gemara, the Tosfos points out that there were a number of people who were left alive from the Gezeirah. The last 15,000 people from the Dera Midbar actually didn't die on Chamisha Asar Ba'av. But in this case, Meisu Kulon ben Pesach Ba'atzeres, there were none of the Kiveth Talmidim left. So, as was mentioned earlier, The Kafar Chaim says that B'shen Dari that was the day when the Talmidim stopped dying that Rabbi Kiva was Yorad Ledorim. He went down to the south and he taught the other five Talmidim, his principal Talmidim, the Torah. The Hem Shehem Idu Torah Boisa Shor, the Gemara says they were the ones who kept the Torah, who held up the Torah in that time. Rabbi Kiva is what the Mekubalim say, Moshe Rabbeinu is the Torah Shebiksav, the Avid Torah Shebiksav, the Bekiva is the Torah Shebal Peh. But the Chasam Sefer says something very, very interesting. The Chasam Sefer says that in his opinion, the Mixas Simcha, the Lag BaOmer, is really because that was the day that the Mon started coming down in the Midbar. He says that for 30 days they ate the Ugos, which they brought out of Mitzrayim, and then for 3 days they had no food, and then on the Yud Ches of Iyar, which is nowadays Lag BaOmer falls out on, that was the day when the Mon started coming down. And therefore there's an Indian of Mixa Simcha. What does this mean? What was the significance of the fact there was a great nest, but we should make a particular Yom Tov about it even today? So the famous Gemara in Brochus Daf Lamedei on the base, it says that Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai says that a person should spend all of his time learning Torah. If there's one shei yisrael osim v'senesh amokim, then he won't have to work and provide for parnasa. Kodesh Baruch Hu will provide. The nitna Torah la'loch le'amon, Chazal say, the Torah was given to people who ate the mon because the ultimate kabbalah Torah is when a person leaves aside all his worldly affairs and is Osek in Torah, and the Kodesh Baruch Hu provides like he provided in the Midbar. But the Gemara says, Abaya says, the Haba Osekur of Shum Baichai will also be Adam. Not everybody is Zeicha to reach us at such a Madrega, and practically speaking, it doesn't work for most people. But Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, the Chaver of Sheterosim and Nosan, the Gemara says, they were on such a level. The Kedushas Levi in Parshas Vayetze, he talks about the story there when Lavan ran after Yaakov ran away from the house of Lavan, and they met up a few days later, and they made a pile of avonim, and Lavan called it Yigas Ardusa, Yaakov called it Gal Eid. So the Kedushas Levi says that Gal Eid is a remez of Lag BaOmer. Gal is Osis Lamed Gimel is Lag BaOmer, and Eid, he says, is Loshon Adi Adoyim, it's a Loshon of Tachshit, it's a remez to the idea of Kabbalah Satorah. And he says that from Lag BaOmer begins the Ha'ora of Kabbalah Satorah, the light of Kabbalah Satorah leading up to Kabbalah Satorah starts from Lag BaOmer. And that's merumas in the word Gal Eid, which Lavan and Yaakov set up at the time. What is the significance and the connection between Lavan and Yaakov and the idea of Kabbalah Satorah? So the Shemesh Shmuel says that there's Maisa of the Simon Abonim. Everything that happened to Yaakov Avinu was a simon to future generations. Yaakov Avinu had to go into Golus, and so Klal Yisrael went into Golus. Yaakov Avinu ran away from the house of Lavan, so Klal Yisrael ran away from Mitzrayim. Lavan ran after him after 3 days, and so too the Mitzrayim came running after Klal Yisrael. Everything was a parallel, it was a remnant to what was going to happen. So he says, when Klal Yisrael came out of Mitzrayim, even though they were free from the Mitzrayim, they still had some type of connection to Mitzrayim. They were still eating the ugris that they made in Mitzrayim, and therefore they still had that connection to Mitzrayim. When it came to the stage when the mon started coming down, from now on they broke off all connection to Mitzrayim, and now they were able to start building up to Kabbalah Satorah. That was the point when Yaakov and Lavan cut off the connection. That was when Yaakov saw the last of Lavan the rest of his life, and that's when the Klal Yisrael saw the end of the Mitzrayim as well. And therefore, perhaps that's the idea behind this, the concept of Lag BaOmer being, as the Chasam Sofer's words, the day which the Mon came down. The day which the Mon came down is the day where we make a break from Mitzrayim entirely. That's the day when the Ha'orah from Kabbalah Satorah begins, and from that point on, it leads up towards Kabbalah Satorah. Just one final interesting thing that the Zohar says, that from Pesach Sheni, for a period of 7 days, the Taran Pesichim, the gates of Shemaim, are open. What are the gates of Shemaim? I don't know the many gates of Shemaim. Those who say the Zbiris Mosi Shabbos know there's all sorts of Sha'arim. On Yom Kippur by Ne'ilah we say Pesach Lonushar. But the Zohar says that from Pesach Sheni for the next 7 days, the Taran Pesichim, all the gates are open. A person can ask for whatever he needs, for whatever he wants. Everyone should, we should use the opportunity from today when the Ha'oras Kabbalah Satorah begins to lead up towards Klal Yisrael, to lead up to Klal Yisrael's Kabbalah Satorah every year. We should use the opportunity, the open gates of the next couple of days, to daven for whatever every person needs, for every individual's needs, for Klal Yisrael's needs, and in that way be ready to be mekabel the Torah in a couple of weeks' time by Shavuos. Thank you.